Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on our program tomorrow, a conversation with Princeton University professor Eddie Glaud about James Baldwin. Professor Glaud's latest book is called Begin Again, James Baldwin's America and Its Urgent Lessons for Our Own. Eddie Glaud is speaking about Baldwin at the annual Enoch Pratt Library and Reginald F. Lewis Museum MLK Lecture, a virtual event on Saturday afternoon, and he'll be my guest tomorrow afternoon here on Midday. And it's another edition of Midday at the Movies now, our monthly look at films and filmmaking. We are joined once again on Zoom by our good friend Anne Hornaday. She's film critic at the Washington Post and the author of the number one huge global bestseller. And winner, I should mention, of the October 2019 Midday Book of the Month Award, Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. And welcome.
Tom, you're the best. Hi.
I gotta tell you, if Congressman Jordan can get the Medal of Freedom, and you can get the Midday Book of the Month Award, there's got to be some justice in the world, you know. So you got it, and we were proud to give it to you. And also on Zoom is our good friend Jed Dietz. He will forever and always be the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Happy New Year, Jed.
Thanks so much, Tom. Good to be here. And congratulations, Anne. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. The list of people to thank is just way too long for one radio show.
All right, so listeners, we want to hear from you guys today as well. Tell us about the films that you've been watching, whether you're streaming things or going to the theaters. Have any movies been especially helpful in getting you through these difficult times? So join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us as well. We have computers at Midday WYPR. So, Anne, in all seriousness, the events of last week, you wrote about them very compellingly in the Post, just a couple of days after the riot that took place at the Capitol, about the very scary obliteration of the line between citizenship and fandom. So Mr. Trump's, you know, following and how that, you know, manifested on the 6th of January and where that's been leading, you know, we've been leading up to that for a long time.
Yeah, it sort of feels that way to me, Tom. I mean, this is a function of lots of different things. I mean, I even look back to a documentary like The War Room, right, from 1993, which made rock stars, quote unquote, mm-hmm. out of people like James Carville and Paul Begala. And then you have the onset of 24/7 cable news, which needs fodder, which needs people and performers. And so those are often the politicians and the wonks, you know, that start to get elevated into this weird status that's almost like akin to celebrity. You know, things like the Washington Correspondents' Dinner becomes this sort of fusion of Washington and Hollywood. And I really do think that sort of impulse to, and then you have social media. And so all of these things to me have converged to create a culture that's more akin to pop culture fandom than really serious engagement with things like policies and issues and, you know, just how you see the government's proper role in our lives and sort of sober-minded discussions. This also, I would say another data point in all of this is the decline in civics education and the kind of all but absence of media literacy education, which is a huge need right now with our young people. And I did think that was not the only motivating force to what happened last week, but it was certainly present in the form of some of those people in the costumes, and just it just felt to me like they had taken almost like a Comic-Con like approach to fandom for President Trump into this real world mayhem.
Yeah, and Jed, you know, Anne writes, citizenship became another diversion, less a matter of informed, level-headed engagement than a vector for hyper-affiliation worthy of pop stars and superhero franchises. Yeah. Politics is more from being about what we believe to who we are. And disagreement has curdled into an existential threat. You know, is this art imitating life? Is art to blame for, you know, hustling that state of affairs along? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think art is to blame. I think art has actually been shining a light on this phenomenon for a while, as Anne pointed out. And one of the things that's so fascinating is as the Trump presidency ends in disarray, and as his claim on the Republican Party seems to be evaporating, it, you know, it's going to take a little while because he's had such a grasp. But that often comes now from the sort of the entertainment side, you know, Twitter and Facebook taking things away, the PGA tournament leaving Bedminster, the British Open saying it will not play Turnberry. I mean, these things really matter. And it's interesting that those forces have joined with, you know, courageous politicians. You know, Liz Cheney, who gave a strong and eloquent description of what Trump had done on the morning of the 6th as anybody. You know, it's funny how these things are fusing. I mean, just as Anne pointed out in her piece. So I think entertainment's part of our culture, and you know, movies are a very big part of it, of course, but all of the cultural forces really come into play here.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When the impeachment vote was over yesterday, my reaction, I guess I'm just Debbie Downer or something, was that 197 Republicans voted for impeachment, against impeachment. That's 94% of the caucus. I mean, yeah. There was much made of the fact that 10 Republicans did vote in favor of impeachment. And the article, I have it right in front of me here, incitement of insurrection. That's what he's being charged with. And yet 197 people in his party thought, eh, it's okay. And
well, and not only that, I mean, what struck me yesterday, and I wish I had had this evidence before me when I wrote my essay, was that you have these new members of Congress, like the representative from Colorado, yes, who seems they're performing, right? It seems like their rhetoric and their behavior, whether it's carrying a Glock around Washington or bullying past Capitol Police officers at the metal detector, it's all for the benefit of an audience. It's all for a Twitter moment or a viral video. So I think that's just another example of what I'm talking about, that substance seems to have been completely, you know, sacrificed on the altar of this performative tribal ritual that everybody seems to be. And I think those votes were a part of that too.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick review here, you know, in November, Trump lost by twice the popular vote that he lost by in 2016. So this is a guy who's never won the popular vote or even come close to it. It was a record in 2016 and it doubled this year. And then the Senate flipped on two Republican seats in Georgia. And he's just been impeached for the second time with the highest bipartisan vote ever.
But so, that's all true, of course. And believe me, you know, the Georgia results were, I think, you know, quite astonishing given the history of Georgia in recent elections, as recent as, you know, 2018. And, you know, God bless Stacey Abrams and, you know, the folks at Black Votes Matter. But, you know, we will have 20,000 National Guard troops on the ground. They're already there on the ground in Washington, D.C. The entire mall is going to be closed. I mean, so east of the Capitol to 3rd Street, there is a gigantic barrier keeping people away from the Capitol by a function of two blocks. Yeah. You know, we have Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia, who won her election, a QAnon supporter, who last night promised to introduce an impeachment resolution against Joe Biden the day after the inauguration. And the Republican caucus is still making the calculation that fealty to Mr. Trump is good for business. And Anne, I couldn't agree with you more, nor with you, Jed. all these, you know, there are some signs of hope, but boy, it seems that it's more than just the country is split. It seems mm-hmm. that there is just a purposeful denial of what is proper, what is legal, what is constitutional, and the purposeful denial is, you know, animated by personal ambition. And Ted Cruz thinks he's going to win the election by carrying the mantle of Trump.
Yeah.
When he runs for president in 2024.
Yeah, and we don't, I mean, we're a week and a day away from the insurrection. I mean, a really ahistorical insurrection for America. So, you know, we've got a lot to work out still. It's funny, Tom, it reminds me a little bit of a little fable that Dorothea Williams, the character that Angela Bassett voices in Soul, when she talks about this ambitious little fish coming and saying to the big fish, you know, hey, man, I want to get to the ocean. And he said, well, you know, it's water. It's all around us. And said, no, but I want to get to the ocean. And he said, son, you're in the ocean. And we're in the ocean, you know, so we got to keep...
We are, and week before you wrote your essay after the insurrection at the Capitol, you wrote about how the nature of presidential movies may be changed forever. Mm. How do you think that's going to play out?
That's the question. I mean, this was actually, full disclosure, this came by way of a wonderful Icelandic director who did a terrific film called Women at War last year. And we were doing a Zoom screening of it. And when we were chit-chatting before the show, that he said, gee, what do you think presidential movies are going to look like? And I thought, you know, what a great question. And I warned him that I would, I told him, amateurs borrow, professionals steal. I'm going to take your idea and make it into a column. So, yeah, I mean, my sense is that a lot of those old archetypes aren't going to work right now. You know, I mean, you know, we've had that kind of wish fulfillment fantasy of the stalwart, straight, you know, straight arrow, straight shooter, man of integrity that hasn't been our reality, frankly, for the last 4 years. So that might get laughed out of town. But then that sort of satirical, cynical portrait that's also been a frequent trope feels a little too close, you know, and a little bit, you know, that was always the foil, you know, for reality and for ideals. And now we've invited it into our collective house for the last 4 years. So it'll be really interesting to me to see how filmmakers address that challenge, you know, in terms of their own imagination.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. Before we do, let me pass along some listener recommendations. And when we come back, we'll talk about some recommendations that Jed and Ann have. A listener who's at work wants to email us anonymously, says that there's a documentary on PBS called 1,000 Cuts, a thing on Netflix called 5 Came Back. That's a documentary on Hollywood directors who are making docs during the Second World War. And also on Netflix, Mank, a drama about writing Citizen Kane. So thank you, she says, for good lunchtime listening. Thank you for listening in. And Michelle emails us with a recommendation for a Netflix series, Shonda Rhimes' Netflix series, Bridgerton. This is getting a lot of buzz. Yeah, and Michelle says it's a perfect romantic escapism of another time and era featuring a multicultural cast and issues. Anne Hornaday is a film critic for The Washington Post. Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. We will have more of Midday at the Movies with Anne and Jed after a quick break. When we come back, let us know what you think folks should be watching. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's Midday at the Movies with Washington Post film critic Anne Hornaday and Maryland Film Festival founding director Jed Dietz. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. So, Jed, you mentioned this movie, Soul. Let's play a little clip. This is streaming now on Disney Plus. Here's a little clip from Soul.
Is this heaven?
No, it's the great before.
This is where new souls get their personalities, quirks, and interests before they go to Earth.
Meet 22.
I don't want to go to Earth.
Stop fighting this.
I don't want to.
Okay, look, I already know everything about Earth, and I don't want anything to do with it.
You're missing out on the joys of life, like pizza. I can't smell. We can't taste either.
All that stuff is in your body.
No smell, no taste.
Or touch. See?
Okay, I get it.
No smell, no taste. Sounds like COVID-19, for gosh sakes. So, Jed, I mean, what do you think? This is a good one? It sounds like fun in the trailer.
Yeah, this comes out of the Pixar operation at Disney that has produced so many great movies. And Pete Docter and Kemp Powers is the first African-American to get a co-directing credit with a Pixar film. I thought it was sort of a mixed bag. I mean, the music is just unbelievable. The opening credits, you want to see from the very beginning, because the movie really starts with the Disney logo. And the opening scene is sensational. I thought all the music stuff was great. John Batiste on the piano, Andy Martin on the trombone. I mean, Dorothea Williams on alto sax. I mean, just, and I'm not a super knowledgeable about jazz, but I thought all the music was just great. It's also very interesting that this hugely successful part of the Disney empire, Pixar, is bringing together these cultural advisory groups to help them create things that are outside the white, Anglo, you know, whatever the primary group of people that are employed, that have been trained as animators or employed at Pixar. And they did this with the live action Mulan at Disney to a mixed result. But they're really working hard, I think, to use the sort of potential power they've got in culture. And Brad Young, this who's a great, great cinematographer that both Ann and I know, was on this cultural group. Herbie Hancock, who obviously is also a very great musician, was on it, etc. So it's a film worth seeing. I thought the Soul background stuff, the sort of inside out stuff from Pete Docter's first movie, worked less well than the stuff on the street. But, you know, the animation, breathtaking, and cool. The music's breathtaking.
So, Anne, what do you think? Which direction are your thumbs facing on this one?
I'm totally with Jed on all of those elements that worked for me and that didn't work for me. I thought the music was exquisite. I thought the animation in the kind of, you know, present day reality-based scenes was absolutely breathtaking. Yeah. I was less compelled by that before time land. You know, I just didn't think that the visuals were nearly as beautiful, and I did think the story just got hopelessly muddled, and yep. they were aspiring for that inside out kind of, you know, metaphysical, but grounded, you know, scientifically grounded exploration of human behavior. And I didn't think that mix worked nearly as well in this one.
We have a comment from Luke, our director and engineer, Luke Spicknell, who writes that on your recommendation the last time you were here, he watched the series of films by Steve McQueen called Small Axe. I did as well. So did Linnell. We loved them. The first film, Mangrove, and the second film, Lover's Rock, were just beautiful, Luke writes. So moving and such an intricate look into the time and place and community, the West Indian immigrant community in the UK in the 60s. And 70s. So much love and heart in these films. I totally agree. And I also agree with Michelle, our friend who's emailed us about Bridgerton. We've just seen a taste of it, but we are, I think, soon to be hooked on that one. And I want to play a little clip from a movie called One Night in Miami. This is available now on Amazon Prime. Let's listen to it and talk to you on the other side.
You brothers, you could move mountains without lifting a finger.
Minister Malcolm X.
Good news, the chariot is coming.
Who's the greatest?
You are!
That's right.
Jim Brown takes the ball.
Your record is going to stand the test of time.
All together, yeah.
The entire city of Miami is celebrating.
I'm the new heavyweight champion of the world, and I don't even have a scratch on my face.
Oh, my goodness.
Cash. On, Cash.
Why am I so pretty?
This movement that we are in is called a struggle. Because we are fighting for our lives.
Welcome to America.
This ain't about civil rights.
Welcome to America.
They ain't giving black people what they really want.
What's that? Power. Black power.
I like the sound of that.
Kwame Kwe Arma, the previous artistic director of Baltimore Center Stage, brought a production of this to Center Stage a few years ago. This is a an imagined meeting between Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown. And what do you think, how does the film version of this, because the play was just terrific, and it sounds like the film version is going to be pretty strong too.
I was really impressed with this. I had not seen the play, so I didn't have that to compare it to. This is the feature directorial debut of the actress Regina King, who I think has, and P.S., written by Kemp Powers, who also wrote Soul. And I just think the two of them did a terrific job of both expanding the story, but also keeping it in that room. It reminded me a lot of The Boys in the Band, you know, because it's, these are two evenings that we're spending with a community of men in a very candid conversation about identity and politics and their place in the world and where that proper place is. And it's just the way that she has kept that wonderful hothouse claustrophobic feeling, but then also opened it up in crucial ways. There's a, each character has an introductory vignette that kind of gets us, shows us where, literally where they're coming from. And the one involving the football player Jim Brown, beautifully, beautifully played by Aldis Hodge, he has a scene with Beau Bridges based in real life, Kemp told me, a story that Jim Brown told that is absolutely like a perfect small film in and of itself. But the performances are just fantastic. Of course, the writing is terrific. I thought she just did a terrific job.
I know we all loved Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is on Netflix. We talked a little bit about it the last time, and Judy Russick and I talked about it just a couple of days ago. But that has been a standout for us. We just have a few minutes left. Let's talk, Jed, about a thing streaming on HBO Max called Let Them All Talk. Great cast, Diane West, however you say her name, Candace Bergen, Meryl Streep. This is a Steve Soderbergh movie. How does this one work?
Well, I liked it a lot. I mean, I want to quickly put it in context, which is very important for Soderbergh, because this is a guy who's made, you know, the Ocean's movies and some very, very big movies, and then retired from filmmaking and has made 8 or 9 movies since he retired. And he started as a cinematographer. He likes to work in these different ways. And he had made a little movie with Meryl Streep called Laundromat, first time they had worked together. And he just called her one day with this idea. And he said, you know, you'll be a famous writer going for circumstances, a bunch of reasons, on a boat to England. And we're going to shoot it on the boat. And we can do it on the Queen Mary too. Are you in? And she said, sure, you know, it'll take 9 or 10 days. And yeah, that sounds like fun. And then they got, you know, Diane Wiest and Candace Bergen. And I thought the containment of it, and Anne was talking a little bit how effective that can be, something like One Night in Miami. And I think this being on this boat, and you're literally on a ocean voyage on the Queen Mary too. Most of it's improvised. Deborah Eisenberg did some writing with them and was with them on the boat. Lucas Hodges plays Meryl Streep's character's nephew. And I don't want to over push this. This is a very tiny little movie, but you're in the hands of a lot of really talented people. And I thought it was pretty much fun.
And Anne, I want to ask you your thoughts on A Promising Young Woman. This is Carey Mulligan's new movie, which is getting a lot of buzz. It's on Apple TV and Fandango now through the theaters. This really has been getting a lot of buzz about as a very powerful piece. What do you think?
Oh, I thought it was fascinating. This is part of a real trend, I think, in 2020 of films that have been created, maybe greenlit, and put underway in that kind of post-Weinstein, post-Trump, basically, or current Trump era, where women are really speaking out and they're speaking their rage. And this is definitely an example of that. It's been written and directed by Emerald Fennell, who comes to us from the BBC series Killing Eve. And if people have watched that show, they'll understand the tone of this. There's kind of a cold, brittle humor that underlies all of it, but a real anger and a real righteous fury that fuels it. And Carey Mulligan's character is, she's up to something. You're not exactly sure what, but when it becomes clear, it's absolutely it's incredible.
Yeah, one that we don't have time to talk about, but it's a documentary that's also streaming on Apple TV called MLK FBI. So, Anne, I want to talk to you guys about that next time, perhaps. Anne Hornaday is a film critic for The Washington Post, the author of the best-selling Filmgoer's Guide, Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival and a leader in the restoration of its historic Parkway Theater. Thanks to you both. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
That's it for us today. Tomorrow, a conversation with Princeton University professor Eddie Glaude about his latest book, Begin Again, James Baldwin's America and Its Urgent Lessons for Our Own. It is a timely analysis of the late African-American novelist, playwright, and activist in his eloquent calls to action on America's unfinished quest for racial justice and equity. So author Eddie Glaude on James Baldwin, that's what we're talking about tomorrow. Stay tuned now for Here and Now, that's coming up right after the NPR newscast at the top of the hour. And tonight at 5 o'clock, WYPR will have live coverage of Governor Larry Hogan's press conference from Annapolis, where he's going to provide an update on the state's vaccination plan. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.